Hello and welcome to episode number 407 of the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. Today I'm joined by Leo.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about what I call a disinfoception, state-sponsored cancel culture, the wokest reactions to Amber Heard's verdict, and the Platinum Jubilee, to let you go off into the celebratory weekend with a load of British pageantry, if this wasn't enough. I always get mixed up on this.
Why are you pointing at ceiling tiles?
That one there.
All right.
On the camera.
So Yeah.
One step ahead.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's get into it with disinformation wars. So there's been a lot of opinions circulating about the Ukraine conflict. And we're going to start with this BBC article about students accusing a lecturer of sharing Russian war lives. So this is a bit weird because we've got researchers at universities who are researching disinformation, who are talking about disinformation, who are subject to potentially of defamation from BBC defamation, so there's this constant circle, and it's quite hard to work out what's going on. So we're going to unravel a little bit about what's happening here.
So are you saying they're being defamed by the BBC?
I am saying they might be being defamed. Obviously not make a declarative statement on that sort of question.
Right.
But we'll get into it. So if we look at this article, so students accuse lecturer of sharing Russia war lives, and this is the student they choose for the cover.
You said she was fit.
No, we'll get to that.
All right.
This is the student they could choose for the cover. Should we have a quick look at her?
This was just your type.
How dare you? Can you see what she's got around her neck?
Some adipose tissue.
Apart from that.
Oh, it's a dick.
It's a very small dick. No, that's that's a child's dummy.
Oh, right.
So I'm not going to talk about any of her concerns because she's wearing a dummy around her neck. And I don't think you should listen to anyone who's wearing a dummy around their neck as a grown adult, quite frankly, unless, you know, they're a mother and there are these extenuating circumstances and blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's the case here. Now, let's scroll down to the next picture in this article. See, why didn't you choose that for the cover of the article?
Yeah. This is why nobody's going to legacy media. Mm-hmm. They don't lead with the hottest woman.
Well, exactly. I mean, you would think that's the logical choice. I mean, in media, it is a fact of the industry that sex sells, and an attractive woman on the cover or on the thumbnail, if you've clicked on this on YouTube. Well,
sex sells. That's why Lotus Eaters is going.
Yeah, you better believe it. Right, so let's get into the meat of the story. So Kvitka Peherinets, who is this lady, a Ukrainian student at the University of Edinburgh, has been anxiously following the war in her home country from a distance. She told the BBC she was distressed by Professor Hayward's recent tweets, I'm not even sure if he's her professor, but he is a professor at University of Edinburgh. Days after a maternity hospital in Mariupol was bombed, Professor Hayward retweeted a Russian representative to the UN describing the attack as fake news. The tweet said the hospital has been controlled by the Ukrainian military and no patients were there. While one of Mariupol's maternity hospitals was no longer operational, the facility that had been bombed was a different one altogether and did contain patients. On learning this, Professor Hayward updated his Twitter thread. So yeah, he spread Russian disinformation, accidentally updated it afterwards. So that's what happened here.
Right. But he also says we should strive to hear both sides of the argument. And one of the sides is a literal dictator. So, you know, I don't think we can give the same sort of weight and credibility to what's said by both sides. You know, people say there's Ukrainian propaganda, and there is. There's obviously going to be propaganda in a war, but it's coming from a relatively free country that's defending itself against a, you know, barbarian who's, you know, all this nonsense about defending themselves from NATO. NATO's never invaded Russia. It should invade Russia. It should, man. They should. I want us to conquest. We should bring back the British Empire and just take over. I'm amazed China hasn't done it. China needs Russia's oil and gas. Mm-hmm. We need Russia's oil and gas. We should meet China in the middle of Russia and divvy it up like we did with Berlin.
Yeah, unfortunately, Berlin didn't have nuclear weapons at the time, which adds a slight fly in the ointment.
Man, I'd be amazed if more than like 10% of those nuclear weapons actually work. I haven't seen the rest of the Russian military.
So only about 1,600 then.
Is that, have they got like 16,000?
Yeah.
Man, yeah, but they've got like pound shop nuclear weapons. They don't have like, we've got proper nuclear weapons here. Man, they'll take out Swindon. That'll be an improvement. And that's it.
Well, that's certainly one perspective, but we continue here. So Professor Hayward continues, acquiring knowledge involves investigation, research, and reasoning. If that's always going to be dismissed as disinformation, I think it's a very dangerous line to go down. But Kvitka said there are no two sides to the conflict. The moment we start to sort of equate the two sides in the story is the moment we lose our humanity, she said. The oppressor, in this case Russia, should not be given the same kind of platform as those who are being oppressed. And I actually agree with that on a level.
I agree.
Yeah, you can't. You do have to be a little bit sensitive to the issue at hand. However, I do think there is a. I think from the information I've been following, there's a lot of stuff is being retweeted and reposted uncritically from the Ukrainian side, which even the Ukrainians disavow a few days later. It's like, well, okay, if we trust the BBC for credibility, and believe it or not, some people still do, then they need to be doing better.
Yeah, yeah, we've seen it with Ukraine took Snake Island, and you know, so many things, and it means then you know, when something does happen, like the Moskva gets sunk, then there's a lag in actually believing it.
Yes, absolutely. So you do have to be careful. Some things are true but sound false, and some things are false but sound true, and it's just part of this information war. But moving on, so as we have it here. In BBC World's latest hit piece against Tim Hayward, there was one important point about Kvitka that they didn't mention. They said she was a student without disclosing that she is alleged effectively state-funded. She's an author at the newspaper Kiev Independent, which, as he says, was set up with money from the US and Canadian governments and the European Endowment for Democracy. So there is arguing that there's, from a funding source, a source of bias there. Now, I don't think this completely invalidates her statement. I think she was reasonably sensible on this occasion, though some of the stuff she puts out on Twitter is a bit more, you know, untrue. But the problem here is that, yeah, this is actually a journalist who the BBC quoted as if she was a student. They just didn't even mention that at all. And I think that's very disingenuous.
Yeah.
If we continue, so we have Tim Hayward commenting on this.
I'm just Googling to see if there's any pictures of her on the beach.
So we have from Tim here, the BBC now attacks university professors, suggesting academic freedom should not be used to question Western justifications for war. In the US, Jimmy Dore raises this as a matter of concern, with Aaron J. Mate critically analysing the BBC's latest attack. And if we skip over the next one and move on to Truth Defence. So past this one. So he's not the only academic to have been caught in the firing line with this line. We also have Dr. Justin Schlossberg here, research director and co-founder of Truth Defence, who's a senior lecturer in journalism and media at Birkbeck University of London. And his work is focused on media ownership, justice, and disinformation. He's written several books about the media, and particularly about the BBC, including this next one, On Shaky Ground, the BBC in a Post-Consensus Age. And the abstract of this essentially research paper is as follows. This article reflects on the BBC's role in reshaping a hegemonic agenda consensus and offers a radical appraisal of its public service performance at a time of unprecedented political upheaval in the UK. This was in 2017. It draws on a recent case study to suggest that the BBC's overarching lean towards an elite and ideological worldview is increasingly exposed and can no longer be defended with recourse to notions of due impartiality.
Unprecedented political upheaval. I don't think 2017 was a time of unprecedented political upheaval.
Well,
we'd had Brexit, I suppose.
Exactly.
But that was it.
Right.
So, I mean, we decided to leave a sort of a sort of trade agreement framework.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's not exactly beheadings and
no, that's
a
true.
New king.
We have had a lot more political upheaval in our history. That's pretty fair. Yeah. But you must remember that this guy, reading between the lines, is a Jeremy Corbyn-leaning academic.
Yeah.
So I believe...
You can tell because he's an academic.
Nah, come on. Some of them are all right. They just keep it under their hat. But no, this guy, he's an interesting case study because he's written this article, which is essentially dead against the BBC, not from a, you know, right-wing free speech perspective, but actually from a left-wing free speech perspective, you know, that increasingly rare animal in political discourse.
Yeah.
And... How has the BBC reacted? Well, they have actually interviewed him and accused him of spreading Russian disinformation.
Right.
This is another disinformation media researcher who's being accused of disinformation. So we have this claim here. Last night, BBC Radio 4 aired a documentary which repeatedly accused me and other academics of spreading Russian disinformation. In a glaring and twisted irony, this amounted to an apparent smear operation that would not seem out of place on Kremlin media. Here's why. And he continues, In my case, the primary evidence offered for this grossly defamatory allegation was a thread I tweeted on the 4th of April, in which I called for journalistic caution in reporting on the Bucha atrocities. And these are the comments he has. So let's talk about Bucha. Russian troops left on 30th of March, and I preface these are his comments at the time. No mention of any massacre or bodies lining the streets for 4 days. No mention in a video uploaded by Bucha's mayor on the 31st of March, in which he celebrates liberation. No mention in an 8-minute video uploaded by local police on the evening of the 2nd of April, discussing and showing their cleanup of the town. Responsible news outlets, including Reuters and the media in non-aligned countries, rightly reported claims of civilian massacre as alleged, along with Russia's response. And which continued to report as foregone conclusion what no journalist or human rights group has yet been able to independently verify. To be clear, a civilian massacre may well have occurred, for which Russia should be held responsible and accountable, on top of other heinous war crimes that have been committed in Ukraine and elsewhere. But Western media must learn lessons of the past and avoid behaving exactly like their Russian counterparts, as stenographers of their governments rather than anything that could remotely be considered independent journalism. Mm. What do you think of those statements?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. About what?
Well, I think, I think he's, man, the thing is, like the UK, like we're not, to say that, you know, the BBC is just an uncritical mouthpiece of the government is a nonsense.
Right. Okay. So if we continue, we'll skip over the next two links. So we get back to the next one. Yep. That one shouldn't be there. Sorry. We go back to the thread reader app. That should have it there. Lovely. So he continues, the appeal for caution was predicated on the fact that widely reported claims at the time had not been substantiated and were not mentioned in recent posts. Rather than engage with the actual meaning of my tweets, the BBC chose to uncritically endorse obvious manipulation by people who have been actively trying to silence and delegitimize any dissenting viewpoints since the start of the Russian invasion. The manner in which the programme achieved this was so cynical and unguarded it beggars belief, even for those of us increasingly sceptical about the BBC's commitment to journalistic standards. For a start, my selectively quoted thread that was the focus of the programme's lead sequence included an explicit caveat, which we've read. In what can only be seen as a deliberate attempt to mislead, mention of this tweet was omitted, in spite of the seriousness of allegations made against me based on the content of the thread. The secondary evidence that the programme relied on relates to an allegation that I share material produced by Patrick Lancaster, who is embedded in a pro-Russian fighting unit and was accused early on in the conflict of reporting on an allegedly staged attack. Are you aware of Patrick Lancaster?
No.
So he's a guy who I am aware of, but I haven't really followed much of his work because he's been embedded with Russian separatist fighters for 8 years.
Right.
I'd be very surprised if he's a neutral source.
And where does he publish?
He publishes on Twitter, on Telegram, and so on.
Right, but not for a sort of...
Yeah, I think he reported for Russia Today and probably still does.
Right.
Where people watch that.
Yeah, and Russia Today, obviously state-funded propaganda.
Yes.
The overseas propaganda wing of the Russian government. Yeah, which I've actually been on.
Have you?
Yeah, I've been paid by them.
Oh, so you got those great old Putin bucks then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I didn't... Because I was like, I knew it was like, you know, because I did stuff with them with George Galloway, who have since fallen out with.
Oh,
but I did stuff and I was like, I'm aware that they're, you know, they exist to undermine Western liberal democracy. But the thing that I spoke about and wrote about was standing up for Western liberal democracy.
Right.
And criticizing wokeism, which I consider, you know, it's funny, all these, it's weird, you know, the horseshoe of the left and right. So on the left, you've got people trying to bring down Western liberal democracy and, you know, because it's the empire and everything's racist in the West and we must fill every country in Europe with lots of immigrants who are completely opposite, you know, values and principles to us, you know, to just bring down this, you know, Western liberal democracy. Mm-hmm. And on the right, it's the same kind of thing. They're all sticking up for Putin, and but from a different angle. They think Putin, you know, they admire Putin's strength and the sort of even and also, you know, his. I mean, it's weird to admire Putin's strength when he's obviously so weak, and weird to sort of look at Putin and be like, oh well, he doesn't allow people in to undermine the country. Mm-hmm. When he's using, or you know, to see him as some sort of, you know, bastion of Christendom.
Right.
When he's using Chechen Islamists, he's using Syrian Islamists that he, mm-hmm. you know, he's busing in to do the fighting for him.
Well, Russia has a larger Muslim population than Britain, actually, by a substantial margin, which yeah. people don't seem to think about when they think of, as you say, Russian as a bastion of Orthodox Christianity.
Yeah, yeah.
No, absolutely. But he continues... So perhaps worst of all, the programme uncritically featured commentary by former BBC journalist Paul Mason, who almost laughingly accused me and others of being Putin supporters based on the fact that I've offered a critical perspective on some of the mainstream BBC coverage. This in spite of my obvious record of posting and publishing damning critiques of Putin's regime, especially in relation to disinformation, including several tweets since the start of the invasion and in 2017, long before Paul Mason showed much interest in Kremlin disinformation. I wrote that Russia Today's coverage is conditioned by an overarching narrative that is nothing more than a cynical exploitation and co-option of progressive discourse aimed ultimately at promoting the regressive and autocratic agenda of Putin, which is pretty much exactly what you said just there. Mm. Of course, Paul Mason is much more of a public figure than I am, making the BBC's wholesale failure to offer me any right of reply to his baseless allegations all the more egregious. And Paul Mason isn't the only one at the BBC. In a further ironic twist, the programme gives an unchallenged platform to Mariana Spring, the BBC's specialist disinformation reporter. There's a whole disinformation industry, isn't there?
Yeah.
Who accuses me of guilt by omission.
No, there really is a disinformation industry. And in fact, that the woman who was heading up the disinformation board, mm-hmm. oh, what's her name? The one who sang the Mary Poppins song. Jankovic. Yeah. So she worked for a Ukrainian disinformation. Oh, what were they called? Stop fake.
Something
like that. Stop fake. And they actually whitewashed Ukrainian neo-Nazi groups who committed pogroms, committed Goodness war crimes me. And pogroms against Roma.
Wow.
Roma people in Ukraine, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm all for, you know, I think Ukraine, if anything, is, you know, it's a European country that can sort of show the value of, because I think in the West we're very sort of down on ourselves and we're like, uh-huh. oh no, we can't show any sort of national pride, right, we can't right. you know, show any sort of resolve or, you know, pride in our values and our culture and all that mm-hmm. sort of stuff, whereas Ukraine is like, no, we're Ukrainian, we're standing up against Russia invading us, mm-hmm. You know, we're not gonna let it happen. So there's, you know, Ukraine's showing the sort of value and the benefit, yeah, and the positive side of nationalism, but flip side of that is there mm-hmm. also, you know, there's some of the negatives of sure, ultra-nationalism sure. as well.
Well, I think it's possible to have nationalism without ultra-nationalism.
Personally. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's where you kind of want to be, in a way, is slightly leaning that direction.
Yeah, and it's sort of weird to see the left, you know, jump on anything that happens in the UK. Anybody, you know, waves a flag or whatever, they're like, oh my God, this is fascism. This is literally fascism.
Yeah.
But in Ukraine, you got literal neo-Nazi groups committing pogroms, like killing people and stuff, and they're like, oh no, we need to cover this up because
That was silly.
Yeah.
And you get people who are just rabid on Twitter about how they will not wave the flag at all, and then they've got the Ukraine flag in their bios right now, and you're thinking, next to an EU flag and some other flag, LGBT flag,
yeah,
and so on, but Pride they'll never flag. Wave the flag. Goodness me. So I think this is a good... This story, the reason I'm bringing it up at length is it's a good example of what happens when someone like the BBC or mainstream media comes to you and they're like, yeah, we're interested in what you think, Leo. We want to hear all of your views. We're going to talk at length about your specialist subject. Then we're just going to report none of that and completely smear you.
Right.
So this is the way they continue. In the interview, he says, I made reference to the story fed to the Wall Street Journal by Bellingcat, which briefly dominated headlines before it was comprehensively debunked by both Ukrainian and US officials, which was the story of Roman Abramovich getting poisoned by Russian secret agents.
Oh, is that fake?
Yes. And I included reference to this edition of Panorama on anti-Semitism in Corbyn's Labour, for which, according to him, there was a total failure of accountability. As a matter of practice, I always record such interviews for personal reference. And oh my God, if you are being interviewed by the BBC, record it yourself.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that could come back to bite you. Listening back to the unedited audio, I was reminded of the producer's attempt to stop me discussing the Panorama episode on the basis that it wasn't relevant. This in the midst of a 2.5-hour interview in which I was repeatedly asked for examples of disinformation and propaganda in Western media, including the BBC. Now, if you think that's disinformation or not, that's entirely up to you, but this researcher does, and that's the point here. And in spite of its obvious relevance to a program that attempts to critically examine my position that all media, to varying degrees, are vulnerable to disinformation, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Ridiculously insinuating that this position somehow lends credence to Kremlin propaganda. So this seems to be the argument. Oh, if you don't uncritically believe the BBC, then you are a Kremlin propagandist. It's like, how about they're both wrong? How about they're both lying? Obviously, that's not an equation of moral value. But come on, let's be real here. Mm. Everyone lies. Everybody lies.
What, I don't lie.
Most honest man in the room.
Apart from when I click that box that says, I pay my TV license, let me watch BBC. I haven't paid my TV license in 17 years.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever happened.
You still get the letters like everyone else, I presume?
Don't even get the letters.
Wow. Fabulous. You must show me your trick sometime.
Oh, they came to, they actually sent a person to the door, and I answered the door hungover and in my underpants. And then the guy was like, it says you don't have a TV license or whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't use it for watching TV. I just use it for watching DVDs and playing Xbox. So come and have a look at it. I want to prove that it doesn't have any wires going in the back. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, I'll just put a note saying, like, you know, you don't use your TV.
That was cleverly done.
Yeah.
During the interview, he continues, the producer was overruled by the program's presenter, Chloe Hudge, who pointed out with a wink that it was, in fact, relevant and that I should be given a chance to explain my views, though, of course, not sufficiently to be included in the program. And this is where it gets worse. I subsequently attempted to engage with Chloe in polite and reflexive discussion of the program's themes via email. I asked for her feedback on my analysis of the Panorama program, which she promised, still waiting, and responded courteously to her follow-up questions. We even exchanged emails on the very day that, without mentioning it to me, she put grossly defamatory personal allegations about me directly to my employer, including this question. Is the university aware that Justin Schlossberg is sharing articles containing disinformation about the war in Ukraine and about coronavirus? And I should have put it in here, but there was a recent case with Andy Ngo, which I think you've seen, where a journalist basically came to him with a load of, are you aware, you know, defamatory statement. Are you also aware, another insult?
Yeah.
And can you comment on another? If a journalist says to you, are you aware that, be very wary. I think that's a
be
fair conclusion.
Be very aweary.
Indeed. I'm weary of it, to be honest. There we go. And he continues, but it does seem to me like the BBC is targeting people who are casting doubt on the BBC itself as disinformation sources. So there is kind of a disinformation war going here. Yep. You know, your disinformation, no, your disinformation, yep. No, your disinformation.
And this idea that you can have, you know, groups that, disinformation groups, and this, the online safety bill, which I think I spoke about last time I was on Lotus Eaters, is predicated on the idea that you can have these government or NGO groups that are tasked with finding out what the absolute truth is. Mm-hmm. And they decide what the truth is, and then anything that isn't that is disinformation. Anything that contradicts that is disinformation. Yeah. And that's not a good way.
Absolutely.
You can't have an oracle of truth, because then who's funding them? What's their
but
agenda?
That's what fact checkers set themselves up to be, isn't it? It's like, well, this is the truth. And when they say mostly false or mostly true, those are exactly the same meaning. But they have a very different impact when you read it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mostly false and mostly true. The difference between those is a pure matter of opinion, right?
Yeah.
You know, everything could be right about your allegation except the color of lipstick that someone was wearing. It's mostly false.
Mm.
Why? Because the fact checker says so.
Yeah.
I'm really not a fan of fact checkers, I think, here in the studio. Because
even
the idea of fact checking, the idea that there is just this one fact that you can dictate to the world that, oh, yes, this is the case and this isn't, is quite shaky ground a lot of the time.
That statement is mostly false.
You heard it here first. And with that, let's move on to the reactions to the Johnny Depp trial.
So, yes, with the Amber Heard Johnny Depp verdict, and I think Carl covered some of this yesterday, but there's so much more stuff has come out. It's hilarious. So the woke responses tend to fall into these categories. So they say it's a backlash to Me Too that's going to be used by the bad guys, so we've got to stop it.
Who are the bad guys this time?
Bad guys are, well, it's like the fact checkers. The bad guys are whoever woke people decide is bad. So, you know, men, white people, right-wing people, that kind of thing. Some people say Johnny is guilty. I mean, even though it's been proven in a court of law that he was defamed, it doesn't matter. They know better than the jury and the the criminal justice system, although it wasn't criminal justice, it was a civil case. But other people are saying, remember black women, because you know, got a crowbar your own issue.
I can't believe that. Surely that's not.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, there's a lot. And also some left-wing people are worried about freedom of speech, which is, I love how they become freedom of speech absolutists when it's one of their own.
Usually at very strange times as well. Yeah, it's like, hang on, freedom of speech has nothing to do with this issue. Why are you bringing it up? Goodness me.
Yeah, and there's also some that are just using it as an opportunity to do some generic virtue signaling.
So current issue, my virtue signaling. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. So a lot of people like Vice are saying that, you know, right-wing people are saying that Johnny Depp killed the Me Too movement. The Me Too movement, you know, for the last 5 years, you know, we've had women saying, you know, bringing up cases of abuse against them. It started in Hollywood with accusations against Harvey Weinstein. And I think Rose McGowan was the first one to actually, you know, burst open and say, look, I was abused by Harvey Weinstein. It was an essential movement in a way, because, you know, men had just been treating women terribly for you know, probably as long as there's been men and women. I bet even before that. I bet the first amoeba to grow a flagelli was rubbing up against other amoebas, making them feel uncomfortable. Yeah, I mean, women in Hollywood, and some of these guys, like Harvey Weinstein, total animal. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's inviting people to the hotel room at 3 a.m. for a meeting, and but on the flip side, surely everybody knew. They weren't going there to Harvey Weinstein's hotel room.
Well, that does seem
notorious. Harvey Weinstein's hotel room at 3 a.m. for a meeting. You know what I mean?
There does seem to be a certain amount of suspicion in the deniability of some of these claims, doesn't there?
And also, I mean, there's people who are sucking dick for like $50, and it's like, if you're a Hollywood star, you suck Harvey Weinstein's dick and you get like a multi-million dollar career and, you know, all the fame, all the adulation from it. Man, that's, come on. You got to be happy with that. But no, these women are still, they're coming back round and they're being like, ah, so, you know, well, I've had this 20-year career, but it's coming to an end now. So now, you know, even though Harvey Weinstein, you know, totally delivered the goods with all this stuff, I want more. I mean, man, there's got to be hoes on the street being like, oh my God, I'm doing this wrong.
Well, a leftist would say that the fact that situation existed was an indictment of the system itself, right?
Oh, the power structure.
It's a structural oppression.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, it's the men, you know, all these like gross, disgusting, fat old men have got the power in Hollywood, which, you know, to which we can say to women, well, why don't you make better films? If you make films as good as Harvey Weinstein, then you'll have the power and you'll be inviting Harvey Weinstein to your hotel room to give you a rim job at 3 a.m. But yeah, and also some of these things, like somebody accused Dustin Hoffman of asking her for a blowjob like 20 years ago or whatever, and she said it made her feel uncomfortable. And, you know, it's terrible she felt uncomfortable, but that's how we get blowjobs. You know, you've got to be proactive about it. You've got to get out there and start asking some of those tough questions, like, can I have a blowjob, please? Otherwise, you just don't get a blowjob. Like, I'm just saying, that's the system we've got for blowjobs. You've got to, you know, they're like, oh, unwanted sexual advances. Who's got a 100% hit rate in wanted sexual advances? You're gonna shoot and you'll miss. Sometimes you'll be like, well, do you fancy it? And they're gonna be like, no. And it's like, well, that, you know, if nobody, we'd all die out as a species if, you know, we just had to make sure it was 100%
yes. Gotta have a consent form signed first these
days. Yeah, consent. How do you, like, oh my God, yeah, it's ridiculous. And anyway, I'm not discrediting genuine victims.
You know, in many universities in the US now, following this Me Too thing, you are advised by the university to get verbal consent before you touch a woman in any way, even just a tap on the shoulder.
Really?
Mad.
Right. Yeah, but if you're tapping them on the shoulder, it's to get their attention. So, you know, you get their attention by asking for the consent to tap them on the shoulder.
That's intrusive. It's invasive.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's grabby, you know, there's touchy feely men, there's grabby men and stuff. And I think, you know, most women have, you know, fallen victim to you know, these creepy men and stuff. And also, you know, there's power structures that encourage it. You know, the flip side of that is Harvey Weinstein made some amazing films. You know, why should I have to suffer when I go to the cinema just so that, you know, some Hollywood stars don't get nonced on by creepy Hollywood nonces? Like, I prefer
that is a convoluted conundrum that you posed to me.
I preferred the old system when I could go to the cinema and see Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, some people got their asses felt or had to, you know, nosh him off in a hotel room, but I could see Pulp Fiction. It was a much better system for me. Anyway, so looking at what people are saying about this, so The Vice article says conservative politicians and talking heads can barely contain their excitement about the verdict finding Amber Heard defamed Johnny Depp. I suppose I should have been less excited in that opening bit. I've sort of proven their point there. Yeah. But more importantly, they seemingly view the verdict as the end of the Me Too movement and its subsequent push to hold people who've committed abuse and misconduct accountable. I don't know. I think it's, you know, some people have said it's actually an expansion of the Me Too movement because Johnny Depp has been the victim.
Has Me Too'd Amber.
Well, Johnny Depp has been, he's Me Too'd Amber by, you know, by speaking out about her abuse against him. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, you know, nobody seems to be talking about this, but there's financial abuse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every time they went out for dinner, I'm pretty sure Johnny, you know, picked up the bill. All right, he's rich and stuff, but you know, this is a sort of an aspect of abuse that nobody ever talks about. So, there's the financial exploitation of Johnny Depp. Vox, if we move on to the next tab, Vox says, Johnny Depp's legal victory and the death of Roe versus Wade are part of the same toxic cultural movement.
Ah, so this is the shoehorn my agenda type of reaction you were talking about.
Every single article is like shoehorning whatever they want in. There's worse ones than this. And they say in the article, they say this verdict is as much as to say that anyone who says the phrase "I was abused" can be sued as a liar. It's like, well, yeah, they can be sued as a liar if they lied, and there's evidence that they lied,
and that caused damage, and it was defamatory. Yeah.
That's why we have a court system instead of just going on Twitter and seeing what some angry women with wireframe glasses and cats think about it. So in the article, Vox says, Depp supporters argue that his victory represents not the end of Me Too, but an expansion of the movement. Depp is helping to break down the stigma against men identifying as abuse victims. And they say, it is true that there is compelling evidence that Heard behaved violently towards Depp. Yes, there is. So, you know, surely, you know, also, you know, I thought we weren't going to be so focused on gender anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, how come male is still this, like, ultimate, you know, power paradigm and, you know, female.
But while there is a tendency to focus domestic abuse on the violence aspect, because obviously it's the most visible, I think the most important part of Amber Heard's behavior in this relationship is reputational destruction, which is a form of vengeance and a vindictiveness that's far more female in nature than violence, which is more masculine.
Very patriarchal of you to say that. Well, I mean, you could say that, you know, Depp's lawsuit is then revenge against, some people are saying it's revenge against Amber. And also Vox says, you know, all right, so Amber, you know, technically she abused him by, you know, hitting him, exploiting him, and there's audio recordings in which she admits hitting him. So, you know, that's not a controversial claim. But Vox says that at all points Depp had more power than Heard because he was older and richer.
That is such a facetious analysis.
It's you can't use that to justify violence. You can't say, oh, well, you can punch that person because they're older and richer. I mean, what, you're going to go up to, what, Stephen Hawking? You know what I mean? What's the logical end point of that argument?
Well, you need a pretty good shovel to start with.
Yeah, but whoever the new Stephen Hawking is, there's probably a new one. But Teen Vogue, I always go to Teen Vogue for my analysis. It's I've scrapped my Economist subscription. Just read Teen Vogue now. So they say the Johnny Depp Amber Heard verdict doesn't matter after the internet made a spectacle of abuse. I don't know. I think the verdict does matter. I think the courts do matter. They deal with objective truth rather than opinion and speculation. Because it's Teen Vogue, this woman, Lexi McMiniman, she says, that sounds like the start of it.
Is that how you say McManaman with a very strong accent?
Liverpool accent.
McManaman.
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 It sounds like the start of the Muppets. But anyway, she says it's creepy because it's Teen Vogue. So the ultimate insult for a teenage girl. That's creepy. He's creepy. And then Lexi says Heard isn't good. She says she's not saying Heard's good. You want to know why? Because Heard did a racist tweet in 2018.
Oh, well, she cannot be forgiven. If she's on my side of the political movement, as is the case here.
She cannot be forgiven. And do you know what the tweet was that was so racist?
Oh, it's going to be something absolutely anodyne and pathetic, isn't it?
It's the most racist thing I've ever heard. I've just heard that there's an immigration checkpoint in Hollywood, a few blocks from where I live. Everyone better give their housekeepers, nannies and landscapers a ride home tonight. And Amber was torn down for that tweet, even though
that's quite funny.
And what are we supposed to pretend that in Hollywood, all these like Democrat voting, like rich liberals in Hollywood don't have Hispanic immigrant housekeepers, mm-hmm, nannies, mm-hmm, and landscapers? I mean, it's a nonsense. Anyway, Lexi McMenamin looks exactly like you'd imagine. She's got short dyed red hair.
And a nose ring, but I must admit,
she's got a nose ring as well.
But she's certainly an improvement on the one we saw in the BBC article with the dummy around her.
Yeah, there. But remember the Ukrainian one?
That's true.
So, yeah. And moving on to some tweets that have been sent. So here we go. So this is somebody getting criticised for their take on the trial result. And Ellie Mistel says, you're focused on the trial, which I could hardly give a crap about. And I'm focused on the verdict and how it'll be used by the bad guys.
But actually, you could argue this is a philosophical distinction between the left and the right, right?
Yeah.
The right cares about process. The left cares about ends. That's why the left will use any means to get their ends.
To get to their
the
utopia.
It's more about, no, it's the process, it's the means, it's that everything's done fair.
So you can kill 50 million people if you're trying to find this socialist paradise.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. I'm only interested in the ends and how they'll be used by the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. And it's and also an individual, they don't see people as individuals. They see the broader social context, but not the fact that, you know, this is a man who's suffered defamation and that's the court proved it.
Yeah.
So, you know, justice has been done.
They look at humanity like it's a load of ant colonies in a big tank, right? It's like, oh, it's the grand sway of collectives here, there, and the other, not the individual people involved in human society.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Next one says, I don't care how you feel about Johnny Depp or Amber Heard, this is a very bad day for women who are victims. The silence so many fought against for so many years will once again descend over survivors of sexual violence and domestic violence. I mean, there's maybe a little point that, like, people might think twice about coming forward, if especially if they don't have any evidence. But, man, there's evidence. There's tons of Amber Heard's testimony. Admitted, there's recordings of her saying she was violent. There's recordings of her saying she was going to maliciously use...
You could hardly ask for a more open and shut case.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And even with, you know, with the... I mean, if anybody's a victim of Me Too, it's Amber Heard, because she was lulled into this false sense of security. Mm. They're like, oh, you know, we believe all women. Oh, yes, no, absolutely. There's no question, no need for evidence or anything. But the court system, you know, they hadn't updated the legislation and the due legal process. So when the courts went through it, they were like, well, we're looking at the actual truth. Mm-hmm. The Guardian got involved as well. Yeah. They said the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial was an orgy of misogyny with a rather stern-looking Moira Donegan there. So they say the backlash to Me Too has long been underway, but this feels like a tipping point. While most of the vitriol is nominally directed at Heard, it is hard to shake the feeling that really, it is directed at all women. I mean, that's in your head.
Yeah.
It was directed at Amber Heard. It wasn't directed at all women.
Because imagine taking Amber Heard as a representative of all women. You'd have to be quite the misogynist to do that.
Yeah, if Amber Heard represents the Me Too movement, that's quite revealing. If Me Too aficionados think Amber Heard represents them. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, it's not the courts, it's not society, it's not Johnny Depp that's damaging Me Too, it's Amber Heard is damaging Me Too. She's the one who's caught lying. And most of the people who had beef with her are women.
Yeah, which I can fully believe.
Yeah. The Guardian also describes Depp's lawsuit, which he won, remember, as frivolous and punitive.
Oh.
Now, judges in a defamation case can actually decide if a case is, you know, when they're weighing it up, before they decide to it gets to court, they can decide if it's frivolous and if it's punitive. Mm-hmm. And clearly in this case, the judge didn't. The judge thought it had merit and it progressed to a jury trial. You tend not to get jury trials for them in the UK. Mm. Lawrence Fox just tried to get a jury for his trial and didn't get it. Mm. And The Guardian says, but the mainstream coverage of the trial has been tremendous focus on Heard's mistakes and worst moments over the course of her relationship with Depp. It's like, well, yeah, obviously they're going to show the worst moments.
Yeah,
like,
why wouldn't they?
That's what the news...
That's their job.
Yeah, that's what the news does. Like, Amber Heard making Johnny Depp a cup of tea isn't news.
No.
Amber Heard taking a big dump in Johnny Depp's bed is news. That's weird, and it's extreme, and it's newsworthy. And apart from the trial, there's tons of evidence that she's the abuser. There's previous things. The next tab shows she was arrested on a charge of domestic violence against her girlfriend in 2009. And The Guardian goes on and says, this cruelty has now been joined in and compounded by the jury, who've gone beyond mocking her for telling her story and now declared that she actually broke the law by doing so. I mean, this seems to be borderline... I mean, this is certainly contempt. I'd have thought this is contempt of court or jury intimidation. Mm. She's calling out, she's accusing the jury of using their decision to harass and bully and mock and belittle Amber Heard, which I don't know if that's legal. I'm sure the Guardian's lawyers.
I think
lawyers.
It is, but that's a very interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know enough about that to say, but I just feel there's... Don't you believe all women, Leah?
I believe some women.
Yeah, I think that's the right place to be. I don't believe this woman, put it that way. If hashtag believe all women means believe this woman, then I'm out, right?
Okay, and moving on to some more responses. This guy deleted. He deleted his... But look at the, too many of y'all dudes. Oh, what, man, like, you're white. I think he's white. I better make sure he's white before I say you're white. But white people saying y'all.
It might be transracial.
It's like, why don't you say finna as well? Y'all finna. It's like, you know, stop trying to appropriate the language of African Americans. But too many of y'all dudes are a little too happy about this Johnny Depp thing, and it's weird. This isn't a huge day for men. You just never liked women, my dude.
Anyone who ends their statement in "my dude" is automatically worthy of condemnation, my dude.
Yeah, and that guy, man, he looks like... It's funny how these people all look like...
You can predict it before you even see the...
They look like
picture.
Their opinions.
Yeah.
It's like it's funny how people... people used to say it's funny how people look like their dogs. Now people look like their opinions.
That's a very good way of looking at it, yeah.
Yeah.
People look like their opinions. It's a bit like Roald Dahl used to say, if you meet a cheerful person, it doesn't matter if they have warts on their face or whatever, you can tell, you get a pleasant feeling out of them because their good nature just sort of shines out of them.
Yeah, yeah. But with these people, their nasty opinions shine out of them.
Absolutely.
And he says on his Facebook is hilarious, I lead the league in pissing off virgins. My POV percentage is off the charts. Let's just have a reminder of what his face looks like. Mr. fucking pussy monster gets all the maximum amount of pussy in the world. Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Ah, disgusting. And if you scroll down, there's more nonsense from him.
Mm-hmm.
But y'all, he says y'all a lot. But yeah, if we move on to the next tab, it's also just a simple opportunity for the people of kindness and tolerance to virtue signal. So Josie Long, who makes a big point of how nice she is.
Oh, yeah.
She does. She's a comedian. Comedy's subjective, so I can't say she's a bad comedian, but you go watch some of her stuff, you know, decide. Then that's, you know, there. I've done her a favor. I've increased her audience and stuff. Go and watch my stuff as well. After you've watched Josie Long, in fact, before you watch Josie Long, watch my stuff, Leo Kearse, on YouTube. Got loads of stuff on there. But you know, she made one of her bits. She makes this thing about how you know, she's such a nice person, and it's, you know, it's the way she opens the show by saying, oh, you know, so I don't have this, I don't, but I'm a nice person,
right,
and that means that I'm better than I think she's having a go at Lawrence Fox or some. But anyway, so she says, F Johnny Depp, C word.
Oh dear.
And then
kind, tolerant. Respectful.
Suze Kempner is another lefty comedian who's actually, I like her. She's a nice person. Well, I don't know if she's a nice person, but I like her.
Well.
Maybe I like her because she's a nasty person. But anyway, she's fun. She says, love you. And Josie's like, I also love you. It's like, man, you're slagging off a guy who's just been proven to be the victim of abuse. Just had to, you know, take somebody to court for defaming him. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, you can have an opinion, but like, why just this F Johnny Depp?
Yeah, solidarity against men, Leo.
Yeah, like, what's the difference between men and women? Like, he could literally turn around and be like, you know, I'm a woman, and then he's a woman, and then you're being abusive against a female victim of domestic violence.
Yeah, that would be vicious.
Moving on, I better hurry this up a bit, but moving on, we've got to remember, who are the real victims? The real victims are black women, obviously. So the widespread celebration and joy of a survivor being gaslit is horrifying if a rich white woman can't even be believed. I don't think she's rich anymore. But if a rich white woman can't even be believed, what about all the BIPOC, queer, disabled folks, working class folks, and other marginalized survivors supposed to feel? Who the F is going to believe us?
Well, she's is she BIPOC, queer, disabled, and working class? I mean, I know she's intellectually disabled, but beyond that, goodness me,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think she is sitting in the, she's somewhere on the, you know, oppression pyramid.
Because I think she's sitting on a large pile of money from simp supporters from about 10 years ago who donated to a thing she never did. But anyway,
oh really?
I believe I. Don't take my word for that. That's
my another defamation trial.
Yeah. Two in one podcast and not doing very well today. Let's hurry on. Let's get to the next one.
My mate had a defamation trial against a comedian who stole some of his material. It never actually made it to court, but because the guy was trying to use the courts to like bully my mate into silence. It's Kay Curd. If not my mate, the Kay Curd's the guy who stole the comedian, stole the material. But somebody in somebody referred to it as a deformation trial. It's like deformation is something else. It's defamation. Deformation is when you leave.
Yeah, but Americans, you know, they're not very good at pronouncing things at the best of days. Love you guys.
Yeah. And there's this is in theroot.com, which is basically Pravda for black women.
Okay.
So they say they say, where are we? If the mistreatment of a wealthy, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white actress is ridiculed by the world, what does that mean for black women? I mean, it probably means that you shouldn't lie to destroy someone's career because you might get found out.
Yeah.
And you might get in trouble.
Yeah.
So it's the same message for everyone.
What goes around comes around is the message that's being sent.
The court isn't... Everybody's got equal rights in the eyes of the law, and it wasn't, you know, nobody's looking like, oh, well, you're this and you're that. It doesn't matter. Your intersectionalities don't matter when it comes to the courtroom, when it comes to the objective truth. They say, for black women who do not have whiteness or fame or money to protect them, Heard's words of the verdict as a setback ring especially true. And it's like, well, most white people don't have money or fame to protect them.
Oh, but they have whiteness, Leo.
But we just have whiteness. And is whiteness a protection? We are all equal under the law.
If you make the secret white power sign, then you just get like this magic shield that surrounds you and prevents you from any kind of criticism.
Maybe is that why chefs are so protected?
That's it, yeah.
Because they're always like, mwah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's the white power sign. the article says, some even believe Depp when he said that she was the aggressor in the relationship. It's, yeah. Because some of the evidence, like they weren't just like listening to what Depp said and being like, oh yeah, I believe that. But there was evidence that showed
evidence
that Heard was...
Evidence is patriarchal and heteronormative and like bad.
So. Yeah, because it's provable, which, you know, is the opposite of what Me Too is. Mm. What happened to Heard is another vile reminder to women, particularly black women, that nothing can guarantee your safety. I mean, what's it got to do with black women?
I know.
It's got nothing to do with black women. It sends a message to those who lie and make baseless accusations that doing so may have consequences. Mm-hmm. You know, if you defame someone, if you maliciously lie about someone with the intent and the result that you harm them financially and reputationally, then, you know, you can get in trouble for that, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly, the left suddenly really cared about freedom of speech.
Oh, I love it when they come back to this argument.
So they say... and they're worried about, you know, journalistic freedom.
It makes a change.
So they say, I'm a bit stunned that more journalists aren't outraged and stunned by the Heard Depp verdict. In addition to being a disaster for domestic abuse survivors, it is a disaster for a publication's ability to tell truth to power. I mean, Johnny Depp is just one guy. It's not speaking truth to power, you know, and he was a victim in the relationship.
They're acting like Johnny Depp is the Freemasons.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And if you speak truth to power, it's got to be the truth. Uh-huh. You can't just make up some stuff and say, oh, Johnny Depp, you know, beat me or whatever. And, you know, if you do say that, it's got to stand up in court. By the way, Adam Davidson, if we go on to the next tab, this guy runs a thing called Masterful Storytelling. This whole thing is from a guy who literally runs a course teaching you how to tell stories to make money.
Goodness me.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be like, I don't know. I should make a more cogent point than just noises. But, and the next tab, absolute effing disgrace of a justice system that says Amber Heard and the rest of us aren't allowed to write about the abuse we've suffered. And should we dare, our abusers can freely use the courts to punish us. Our abusers can't freely use the courts to punish us unless there's evidence that you lied and there's there is so much evidence in this case that, you know, she was the abuser, he didn't abuse her, and she planned on, you know, maliciously using this. She threatened him with all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. The next one says, I don't know if you guys realize that there is now a very famous precedent for how saying publicly that you're a victim of domestic violence without naming your abuser is considered defamation.
She did a bit more than that, though, didn't
she? Yeah, I mean, she didn't explicitly put his name. She didn't say Johnny Depp in the article, but she said, you know, this happened 2 years ago or whenever it was. And it was the time when she was in a relationship with Johnny Depp. So it was, you know... It was effectively naming him.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, they didn't pull this verdict out of their ass.
No.
You know, they did think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, like, consider evidence and stuff like that. Amber's reply.
I think, really, the takeaway lesson from here is the importance of actually thinking about the evidence, because otherwise you end up looking like a complete idiot. And nowadays, once you look like a complete idiot on Twitter once, you're, you know.
Yeah, and, like... Yeah, also the courts are different from social media. It's like it's a place where they try and divine, you know, the objective truth rather than, you know...
The political truth.
Political truth and the wider contextual truth.
Mm. You're saying about Amber's reply.
So Amber's reply, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So she actually defames him again. She says, the disappointment I feel today is beyond words. I'm heartbroken that the mountain of evidence was still not enough to stand up to the disproportionate power, influence, and sway of my ex-husband. She didn't have a mountain of evidence. You know, she had some claims and stuff. He had the mountain of evidence. And, you know, she's saying it's patriarchy that did this, not the fact that, you know, and she's saying, you know, he's got the power. And I would say that actually she's got the power. Yep. She's got the institutional strings that are there to...
To literally just believe her, whatever she says, regardless of the evidence, because that's the current thing.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, the institution, we've got the criminal justice institutions that are there to protect victims of abuse. So we've got the system, these laws to, you know, to protect. So you can, it's a crime. It's a crime to abuse someone. And she also had the socio-cultural power that the Me Too movement gave her. And she says, I'm even more disappointed with what this verdict means for other women. It's a setback that sets the clock back to a time when a woman who spoke up and spoke out could be publicly shamed and humiliated. It sets back the idea that violence against women is to be taken seriously. And this is, you know, it's ridiculous.
But violence by women shouldn't be taken seriously.
Yeah, yeah. If anything, this is sort of progressing Me Too to, you know,
slightly closer
men.
To common sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And making it less of a gendered thing. And as we all know, gender is a construct, so it's about time we move beyond gender with that. Mm-hmm. I believe Johnny's attorney succeeded in getting the jury to overlook the key issue of freedom of speech and ignore evidence that was so conclusive that we won in the UK. I'm sad I lost this case, but I'm sadder still that I seem to have lost a right I thought I had as an American to speak freely and openly. I mean, I thought this is America defense. This is like... And she also, by the way, she speaks up for freedom of speech, and the replies are locked on this tweet.
Of course,
so you know, there's not much freedom of speech going on there. Mm-hmm. And she's basically saying, can a woman not falsely accuse a man in the Washington Post of raping and beating her for political and financial gain? I thought this was America. So there are limits on free speech. Yeah. You can't just run into a theater and shout fire,
unless
fire.
There is a fire.
Unless there is a fire. You know what I mean? The evidence is very important in these cases. And, you know, Me Too was based on the premise that we should believe all women. And, you know, I think all these Me Too advocates, they would do the Me Too movement so much more of a favor if they just came out and said, like, look, you know, maybe there are some instances where women, you know, particular individual women lie and have lied and have been proven to lie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Me Too, we shouldn't believe all women. We should believe a lot of women, and especially when there's evidence to support
it. I'm equal opportunity. I think women have the equal opportunity to be an absolute piece of work as men do. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Amber Heard is, you know, as much of a victim of the Me Too movement as she's sort of hurt it. She's damaged it as well. Yeah. You know, she was told, oh, we'll believe you no matter what. And, you know, that didn't work. But we've also got to remember, just finishing this, we've got to remember Johnny Depp, he's nearly 60. He's still carrying on and playing like he's a rock star and stuff. It's like, man, you're not. You're nearly 60. And you're an actor.
He's a mean guitarist.
Yeah, does it, man, there's nothing sad. Oh, man, some guy noodling on his guitar. Well, that's absolutely tragic. You know, the best rock stars can't even play their guitars. Look at Jesus and Mary Chain.
Okay.
They can't play a guitar. The guy can play like three notes. That's all you need. That's all you need to be a total badass. Also, Amber Heard is really fit. So, you know, like I could tell looking at Amber Heard, man, she's trouble. She's really fit though, but she's trouble. So how come I'm smarter than Johnny Depp?
How indeed. And on that note, let's move on to our next segment, which is about the Jubilee. So I thought we'd go through and we'd just explain a little bit about what the Jubilee is for some of our foreign visitors and viewers who don't really know what it's about and so on. So we've had now 70 years of Queen Elizabeth's reign since 1952, and this marks the 70th anniversary of that. She came in on 6th of February 1952, and she turned 96 this year, but the celebration is held basically at the same time as her official birthday in the start of June. So in the UK, there's an extra bank holiday. We don't get that because we're media.
We get two, I think.
Yep, and the usual spring bank
Thursday
holiday.
Thursday and Friday.
Yep, that's the spring bank holiday that's been moved from the end of May to the start of June so that we get the four-day bank holiday weekend. So, yeah, everyone seems pretty happy about that out in town. You're not taking advantage of that? You're working all the way through?
I had a few days off at the start of the week. But, yeah, no, we had to come back from holiday and record. I do this comedy show called Ministry of Offence on GB News. We normally record on a Thursday. We recorded on Wednesday so that people could have the long bank holiday off, the editors and stuff. That's going out Saturday on GB News. I think it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, okay, excellent.
Got Scott Caputo on, got Andrew Doyle on, who got mentioned earlier.
There is no rest in media, but the rest of the country is having a bit of a break. Now, you might already have Jubilee fatigue. You know, you're fed up with everyone talking about it. So I've just got a quick message, if that's you. Let's play the next clip.
Is that our national anthem?
No, but it should be.
What is our national anthem?
God save the Queen.
So why don't we make this the national anthem?
That's a very good question. Maybe it's a bit too militaristic, too nationalistic.
Because when the Queen dies, Prince Charles is going to be king. So God Save the Queen won't work anymore.
It changes to God Save the King.
What? You can't change the national anthem.
That's what they do every year.
What?
I know. That's the thing with having a gender terms for your monarch, don't you?
Right.
It's a funny feature that we've got there. Personally, we don't have an English national anthem, which is one thing, and there are three candidates. Do you know what they are?
Jerusalem. It wouldn't be like a sort of modern one, would it? Like Vindaloo or something like that?
No, much better.
Is it the Neil Diamond song?
Nope.
I don't know then.
So it's Jerusalem, it's Land of Hope and Glory, and I always forget the third one, which is the least popular of those three. But Land of Hope and Glory, absolute banging classical tune by Elgar. It was my vote for it. Most people like Jerusalem. Can't remember what the third one is, but let us know, John, if you find out later. So before we get into the details of the ceremony, I just want to point out that the Queen has, I counted, I may be slightly wrong, 70 corgis. She's had 70 corgis.
70?
Yeah.
That's too many.
She's had 14 generations of
corgis. You mean over the years she's had that many, right? How many has she got at like one time?
I don't know. There's usually a little bundle, but I'm not much of a royal watch. If we scroll down, John, there's the full family tree on this page of the dogs.
Corgis, you know they're named because they can actually...
look at that!
They can validate the safety of gas appliances.
Oh, dear. So we're just going to go through a load of photos from the Jubilee and we're going to talk through a bit about what we saw. So if we go to the next one, this is the salutes. So we start off with salutes from all around the world. We've got Gibraltar here, all nicely dressed up in white. And then we've also got a Tower Bridge.
Gibraltar is like a rock off the coast of Spain that sort of guards the entrance to the Mediterranean. And it's British territory.
Yeah, just like Suez. Oh, wait, hang on, I'm hearing Suez is not British anymore. God damn. But we also have this one from the Honourable Artillery Company in London. And look at that photo. I mean, that's a really good photo, whatever you think about the celebrations.
Yeah, that's being fired across the Donex River.
It's just arcing its way over Berlin as we speak. And then we have the Four Nations salutes next. So you must know that one.
Oh, is that Edinburgh?
That's Edinburgh, the Northern Ireland. Wales, and that's in the garden.
Cool.
And if we go onto the flyover, we have this photo here. You can see the beefeaters are out in force. Do you know what they're called, beefeaters?
They eat beef?
Yes. I know, it's literally that simple. We're not very imaginative as a people in this country. And finally, I just want to play some clips from from the ceremony. So there's a little summary. Listen.
This is a scene from Hyde Park. They don't have anything in the gun.
John, did you clip this into bits or is it?
Well, look, it seems a great
it's amazing,
sea of people coming down.
That's
from the far end of the Mall. These are people who have waited patiently in order to
just
wish
park their boats
these
at the
very
end
happy
of the street.
Platinum Jubilee. There's some cheering behind me. And I'm sure that's
and a lot of people have
louder
been saying that the display of so many Union Jack flags is fascist. A lot of leftists have been saying it's fascist.
I know, but they never say that when it's LGBT flags, even in greater number.
Yeah, funny, yeah. Right? And also, the Union Jack represents the UK, which I don't know if you, I don't know if you're aware of any history or anything. The UK, Britain, single-handedly beat the Nazis and bombed Japan.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And if we go here, this is the Queen arriving on the balcony.
Oh, and there's no Prince Andrew.
I know.
Prince Andrew isn't on there because he tested positive for COVID.
Yeah.
Nothing at all to do. I mean, how convenient. There's Prince Charles.
The Queen looked down
be the new
from this
king
balcony with her father at the
but
end
the
of
Queen
the Second World War in 1945.
The Queen's mother lived
she
until she was 111.
At the end of her coronation in 1953.
So the Queen is only 96.
69 mm-hmm years
so
ago
I don't know if,
today.
I don't know if she's going to carry on.
After 70 years mm-hmm as our sovereign, the Queen with the working carry members of her family who support
there's
her
Kate
in
Middleton
her role.
There's Sophie
she's
Wessex
getting a
Essex
huge happy birthday.
And I don't know who the rest are. Who's the flower pot woman?
But is that right at the end?
Is that Edward?
Yes, and I think no that's way the Lady Louise in the hat there.
Prince Edward. So all the sons in the royal family, there's mm-hmm Charles, Edward, Andrew. They're mm-hmm all like useless in different ways. Mm-hmm. And Prince Edward wanted to be a theatre person, and he staged in the 80s. He staged this thing called "It's a Royal Knockout" mm-hmm with a disgraced paedophile hosting it, mm-hmm, Stuart Hall, and. Was he a paedophile or was he just a...
No, I don't know.
Was he an
of
age?
Know,
well, he got sent down for something.
Right. Oh, dear.
I'm going to Google it now.
I hope not.
Yeah, former media personality. But it was absolutely chronic. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's in prison now.
Goodness me.
Child sexual abuse. So, yeah, sorry, it was a nonce. Man. Like 98%...
Not Prince Edward.
Not Prince Edward. Right. Not,
just to make
but
that clear.
He did... Prince Edward did arrange mm-hmm this terrible thing. It's a royal knockout. Mm-hmm.
So the third anthem was I Vow to Thee, My Country.
Never heard it.
I think it's sung to the hymn of Jupiter.
Never heard that either.
I vow to thee, my country. Do, 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 do. That's the way. Yeah, all right. Let's go to the next one, the flyover.
Are they Chinooks?
No.
There's a really deep downdraft and rumble as they go over here, and it's fantastic. But look, perhaps one of the
are
greatest sights of all.
Yep.
From the
World
Battle of Britain flight right coming towards us now. And for the Queen and her generation, as they see this great
so
Lancaster
the Queen
bomber
been alive
by three Spitfires and two Hurricanes. What a great sight.
She was an adult.
How adult?
When she was born in the 20s.
Oh, so she would have been,
I think
yeah
two Spitfires. Maybe one of them wasn't up to snuff this morning, but look at them flying over
and that's,
now.
Spitfires,
the roar, listen to
Hurricanes,
it rings
and a Lancaster bomb.
Of 1939 to 45.
So, I think it's really interesting the way they're doing this filming, actually, where you have the split screen and you've got the event happening, which is the flypast, and then you've got the camera literally on the Queen and the people around her. It's actually an interesting storytelling device because you're seeing the reaction in real time. It's almost as if they've learned something from internet. I mean, I don't know how long they've been doing it in that style, but it's a really good way of telling the story that way. Right. And then occasionally a third camera on the crowd, which I thought was really interesting.
And a lot of people have been flying into the UK for this event, mm-hmm, even though so they're in London. And
especially the Green Lobby, right?
Yeah.
Jacinda Ardern, okay.
They're in London for this, and London is a rubbish place to go on holiday. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't come to London for this, you dodged a bullet, like one that would be fired from the tail gun of that Lancaster bomber. So yeah, don't come to London on holiday. It's a terrible place to go on holiday. It's really expensive. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cramped and dirty and noisy. There's no beaches. It's the mm-hmm best place to, unless you got like a special thing where you want to see like, you know, some British history or something like that. The best place to go on holiday is Thailand,
mm-hmm.
Anywhere in Southeast Asia. It's cheap, it's warm, it's mm-hmm. fun. Australia is good, it's more expensive.
Right, okay.
And like loads, most of Europe is more is cheaper than the UK.
That's true, but then we have most of the loot. So if you want to go and look at loot, we have museums and heritage sites and everything.
Like, you can look at it on the internet, there's no point, you're just going to look at a bit of stone. Who wants to go and look at a bit of stone?
That's true. If we play the next clip.
Wave 7 and the workhorse of the Royal Air Force, which has helped deploy troops to challenges all over the world.
Village.
Supporting the Royal Navy,
like
the Royal
the
Air
cottage
Force.
I grew up in and was also in, the in this army valley, and they used to fly down the valley. Did a lot of army training around my place because the locals were like Taliban. And they used to fly those Hercules things so slowly down the bottom of the valley. Below my house. It was crazy. You look down on them.
Mm-hmm. Wave 10 is a Voyager, a Lightning, and a Typhoon. And remember, all these aircraft have to be timed at different stages.
Just a normal plane.
As each of them lifts like
you've got a normal plane there. You run out of like army planes.
Is that might
the
be
the airflow system British that needs to get into to get out of the way?
The official transport.
That's what took Prince Andrew to Lolita Island.
Probably not, no. No.
Attack aircraft.
are they the Harrier jump jets? Oh, no, they're the little...
they're out of service.
Yeah.
If we...
Britain invented this plane called a Harrier jump jet, and it could just take off like... Mm-hmm. Like Iron Man.
Yeah, very cool piece of engineering, actually.
Very cool.
Is that the end of the clips, or is there one more? Let's play the last one.
Wave 13, 15 Typhoon. Making the mark of the Queen's 70 years as sovereign.
She's been
long time. And Prince Charles was married to a woman called Princess Diana, and she was not funny. And she died in a tunnel in France. She was being chased by the paparazzi.
And here they come, the Red Arrow.
And
red,
there are suspicions
white and blue filling the sky with
that,
the great salute.
Because some people in the royal
three
family
national
wanted to
colours.
Get rid of her.
The Queen,
she's very much
Platinum
the sort of
Jubilee.
You sort of,
Commander
you sort of like you sort of like Meghan Markle. If Meghan Markle was popular with the public,
yeah.
So Princess Diana was popular with the public but unpopular with the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Meghan Markle is unpopular with the public and unpopular with the royal family.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. So one meme that's come out of this, of course, is Prince Louis, who has been, if we go to the next Twitter. So he was a very expressive young man, and someone compiled a load of his facial expressions, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
You've seen this meme format.
No. But if anybody's at school with him, you should bully him. Because he's literally like a prince or something.
Yeah,
is he
yeah.
a prince? He's a prince already, even though he's like 5.
I believe so. Yeah, you're born a
man.
Prince, man.
Right? Are you? I don't know.
Yeah,
they should have some
blood.
Sort of. It seems wrong that you're just born. You should achieve something.
Right,
you should get it from.
That's a meritocratic
achieving.
Standard.
Well,
the
not. It doesn't need to be a meritocracy. Like just you beat somebody in a fight.
Okay.
So who? Oh yeah, whoever beats, mm-hmm. whoever kills the king, isn't that how it used to be? If you kill the king, you can become king. So like you can get to be king, but then somebody else can come along and kill you.
I can see that being a rather unstable social institution.
But they don't get to do anything. They don't get to do any have any political power.
What happens if you end up with like Mike Tyson as the king?
He'd be a great king. No, hardly anybody could kill him. He'd be the best.
Well, that's the one criterion of being a good king is that he's hard to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't buy it.
And Mike Tyson, I think, well, it'd be representation, some fair representation.
That's
we haven't
true.
Had any African American people as royal family in the UK. Oh, I guess Meghan Markle.
She claims to me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, if we go to the next one, we've also got lots of crowds, like loads and loads of people. That's a ton of people.
Where are they all peeing? Are they all peeing behind the trees?
No, I imagine they've got adequate facilities distributed around the area that you probably have to pay £5 to take a leak in.
I wonder if they pee in the fountain.
And if we go to the next
British people love taking their shirts off as soon as the sun comes out and then urinating in public.
So just some photos from Trooping of the Colour with the Irish Guards there.
They have to wear massive hats.
Yeah, they're not Irish Guards.
No.
That's Camilla and Kate.
Irish Guards, a lot of them aren't even Irish.
Yes, that's true. So more than 1,200 officers and soldiers from the Household Division.
Where's the disinformation
of pageantry? What's that?
Disinformation board needs to get on that, calling them Irish Guards. It's mostly false.
It's against trade standards, isn't it? No, you're right. And then more from the Trooping of the Colour here.
But even though they look like they're sort of toy soldiers, they're actually pretty
proper
hard
soldiers,
and they can shoot you.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they've got a gun.
Mm-hmm. There has been some negative stuff surrounding it, but Josh will be covering that in a weekend segment. But there have been tributes from around the world as well. So Switzerland's projected a light show onto the mountains, apparently.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. If we go to New Zealand, they've also done a salute here. You can tell they're New Zealand because of the funny hats. If we go to President Biden, even he had something nice to say. And I think he remembered most of it. Macron from Europe, from France.
Look at him.
He always looks a bit fake, doesn't he? Yeah. He looks like a Ken doll. the way his head bobs about, it is like he's on strings a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you remember Spitting Image? Do you know that?
Yeah, show? Yeah.
Right. He looks like a Spitting Image puppet sometimes.
Yeah.
That sort of bouncy motion.
Yeah.
But having said that, this was a very classy message. You know, when the French want to, which is rare, they can be classy, and they pulled it off.
Probably remembering the time that the United Kingdom, Great Britain, single-handedly saved France from the Nazis.
Mm. If we go to the celebratory bonfires in Oceania, we can see they lit a few bonfires. I'm told these are celebratory.
They don't have any guns?
Apparently not, no. Bit disappointing, really, that the Naurans don't have proper artillery. That's from New Zealand there, I believe.
New Zealand.
Then we have the Red Arrows, as we've just seen. So some pictures from their flypast, and that looks pretty stunning. Like, wow. And then also more from the flypast here.
So that's from the viewing tower that's built next to the Red Arrows.
I think that's actually in the cockpit.
No, because you wouldn't get a plane flown by a giraffe.
Ah, that's a very good point. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
I went to Cotswold Wildlife Park on Tuesday.
Oh, right.
It was great.
Was there a giraffe?
There was a giraffe. There's several giraffes. They had baby rhinos that had just been born. Mm-hmm. They had gerbils, which you can see in like pet shops and stuff, but it's cool having a big tank where they're running about, like zooming about, doing all their stuff. Mm-hmm. They had gundu rats, but last time I was there, there's millions of gundu rats.
You're saying they can pilot tanks, but not planes?
What?
The giraffes.
You said, yeah.
Oh, okay. I see. That's how it works. If we have more from the flypast here, there's one of the helicopters.
Which has fallen to the ground because you can see its rotors aren't spinning.
Ah, yeah. Classic rookie move there. You should have known that in training. And then some of the police. This is actually the police looking decent, wearing their actual uniforms instead of a fluorescent smock.
Right.
They look like police. Do you not think this looks better?
Yeah, I think it'd look better if they're actually turning up to my car when it had been broken into and people had stolen stuff from it. I think that would have been a better look for the police instead of just not doing anything whatsoever.
Well, I can sympathise with that, but I certainly think the combination of like tactical and fluorescent sacks does not work. This is what a police force should look like in Britain. But anyway, also in Stonehenge there was a light show of various ages of the Queen. I'm told the Queen was only a young child when Stonehenge was built.
I was going to make that joke.
Oh dear. And then if we go here, there's a bit of Britpop. So your colleague on GB News,
Mercy
Moroki, rocking a Union Jack dress.
Yep, looks great. And what is that, like an E-type Jag or something?
I believe so.
Right.
So yeah,
classic
very
British
stylish
car.
Exactly. Moving on. There are some who have struggled, and they see even this in the frame of Trump derangement syndrome. As an American, I don't have much use for royalty, but on this jubilee, let us not forget that the Queen hated Donald Trump's stinking guts, and so that's good enough for me. Long live the Queen. It's probably not a good time to point out that the Queen has dined with Robert Mugabe, Nicola Ceausescu, Xi Jinping, and yes, Vladimir Putin. So if she hated Donald Trump's guts, then I imagine she had it very well.
Hmm.
And then we also have Big Ben, which has been renovated recently. You can see there, that's standing properly. A school in Antrim got together to make a Union Jack flag this is in Northern Ireland. That's nice, isn't it?
Ooh, and that's a divisive issue in Northern Ireland because obviously half of Northern Ireland is Protestant and Unionist and wants to be in the UK, mm-hmm. and the other half is Catholic and Republican and wants to reunite Ireland.
And they tend to go to different schools as well.
Yeah,
I'll let you guess which one this was. But if we go to the next one, we've also got a Jubilee medal as one of the Beefeaters is modelling. I think he's got some beef in his beard there, actually. And finally, just more of the crowds. And as the beacons, they've lit a beacon this year, which is being lit as well in all 54 capital cities of the Commonwealth. We'll just close with this, just watching that light up.
Look at the lights going along.
Yeah. So there we go.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to say. So finally, the full thing, pressing a button.
Is she doing? Oh, she lit it.
Yeah, I don't think she had a lighter. I think there was a button or something like that.
And then it's all zooming along.
Actually, I wonder if the Queen has ever been asked if she has a lighter.
Prince Philip. How come he was Prince Philip and not King Philip? Because technically he was the king,
it's a precedent established, I think, from the time of Queen Victoria, who wanted her husband Albert to be given the title of king, and Parliament wouldn't let her because Albert was a foreigner and she was the rightful queen.
So it's Prince Philip, he's Greek.
Well, so the same precedent applies.
Oh, right. Because he died like not long ago, like a year or two ago. Mm. So, you know, she's sort of sadly been on the decline since. You see a lot of old people.
Absolutely. And if you want to check out more stuff from us, you can just go to lotuseaters.com and you can see we have all of our premium and non-premium content here to check out. And with that, let's go straight to the video comments.
While homosexuality was illegal, but now is not, trans people have no such laws interfering with them. Similar to abortion protesters, it seems that trans want laws to legalize who they are. The trouble is that laws exist to mandate or prescribe certain actions. How do you mandate abortion? How do you say that abortion must happen under certain circumstances? It's as ridiculous a notion as mandating transitioning if certain conditions are met. What are the conditions? And what if the person has a change of mind in the future?
So he's saying that they're a movement that gets like their moral legitimacy from what the law tells them they can do, which is a misreading of the law, which is basically there to tell you what you can't do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting perspective.
But then I guess it's saying you can't deny access to abortions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be a more sensible look at things, right? But he's saying that he feels the legitimacy of these movements derived from they're wanting like a positive law saying these people exist, mandates their existence.
Right. But I mean, they exist by
existing.
Yeah. And they've got equal rights under the law because everybody's got equal rights.
Yeah,
under the
law. Yeah, but according to their argumentation, it's almost as if you can deny their existence by mistakenly using the wrong pronoun.
Right.
As if they don't exist because of that. We've got quite a few video comments, so let's go through them.
So because I was actually helping and not standing around in the way with a camera the entire time, then I didn't get to film the most interesting bits. But at this point, then the pulleys on the front were a little too big to squeeze the engine through the slot and get it in. And so, yeah, we had to take those off. And even then, it was still very tight.
That looks too big. It looks too big to go in, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. People often send in their work, and it's quite good to see people doing actual work.
Work. To the next one. Real work, not like fintech.
Mm.
The main reason for the Vikings to invade the East was their abundance of silver. And as you can see, the Vikings were correct. There was a lot of silver and they made lots of stuff to show their riches.
These are some chunky silver necklaces, I tell you what.
An awesome comment. Also, where are my reparations, Denmark? You know, you invaded us for like hundreds of years and we haven't had a penny out of you.
So, but she's saying when the Vikings invaded the East.
Yeah, so presumably like down the Byzantium and so on. They got around.
Right, yeah.
Got around the Vikings.
So not us. We weren't providing the silver.
No, but like the Kievan Rus. Kiev was originally settled it was invaded by the Vikings who took over in the early hundreds, which is why a lot of the Ukrainian Russian people have a kind of Viking ancestry as well.
Right.
Rather than being purely Slavs.
Right, yeah. A lot of Irish people as well. I think my wife is part Viking.
No.
She looks very
Viking.
Yeah,
no, the Vikings got everywhere, but they still haven't paid up. I mean, what's that? I thought we lived in a social justice world.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
Right,
is not a bad thing. Oh, great.
If you've seen, and you will have seen the footage, it's just crazy. Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. Oh, this is it. Oh, yeah.
Mark Pursley.
Morning. Apologies for the second video. Hopefully this goes through. I woke up this morning to the news that whilst I was working down the beer tent, we had a fatal crash involving 29-year-old Mark Pursley from Wales. All the riders who come here know the risks. It's just unfortunate this sort of thing happens. Hopefully his family are okay.
Yeah, our condolences to Mark Pursley, but like you say, he knew the risks. You do these high adrenaline sports, and it does happen.
Yeah, geez, but like, right, I used to ride a moped, and I got rid of that because I thought, man, I'm gonna die in this thing because it's dangerous. Mm. It's dangerous.
That's where the thrill comes from.
Yeah, I got run over by a truck.
Oh, and, bloody hell! Yeah, is that why you got so long?
No, that's what ironed me out. No, but I did my leg.
Oh, bloody hell! Goodness me.
That's what happens. So be
your
careful.
Discretion advised, yeah.
Be careful and don't ride a motorbike.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next comment.
All this promotion of eating bugs, it makes me think of an old saying, you become what you eat.
Very good point. You've had the stories about people insect eating being promoted in schools and so on.
Yeah, and then he's listing the things that we actually get from bugs. So carrageenan, there's a lot of this stuff is already in. We're using bugs in food. There's a food coloring as well. I'm not sure which one it is. There's there's a red color that comes from beetles, I think.
Right,
I can't remember what else.
I have to look that up. Let's go to the next one.
So like another million of Norwegians, I have a problem with my stomach. And turns out that a lot of things got a lot better after I quit eating E407, E433, and E466, some of the most used additives in food and pills. So
I'm gonna tighten that down,
try to avoid them and see how much better you feel. Really.
7, 433, and 466.
Oh, yeah, carrageenan or carrageenan isn't from bugs. That was my mistake. It's from red seaweed.
Oh, okay. I'll have a look at those later. But yeah, let's go to the next comment.
So we finally got the engine into the truck. However, the engine mount bracket was catching on the power steering pump because Ford were absolute jerks about where they decided to stick it inside of the engine cavity. So my brother hooks up the chain on the opposite side of the motor so he can give it a lift and twist it into place. And it pops in, but the motor was still crooked and needs some more adjusting. So we'll maybe do that next weekend.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Go to the next comment.
This is a response to Sean Knapp's video retort. Whilst I agree with you that autism is not a superpower, along with its cringe romanticization of a disability, I wouldn't put yourself down because of it. Speaking as someone who has a form of autism, I understand where you are coming from, as I have been there myself. It is painful, but this pain can build your character. Everybody's got their strength and their weaknesses. Focus on your strength. I hope this message finds you.
Yeah, I think most men are autistic, and a lot of women are autistic as well.
Okay.
In some level.
Mm. I think I have a maxim that everyone's crazy when you get to know them well enough.
Yeah.
And most people pretend to be normal and they're absolutely not.
Yeah.
You don't pretend though. That's good. Let's go to the next one.
While browsing Amazon Prime Video, the 2020 CBS adaptation of Stephen King's The Stand appeared in the watch list. I had watched it before, but it is quite forgettable. Anyway, imagine my shock when Amber Heard appeared as a main character. As I watched, it became clear that Heard has no personality of her own, but is, in fact, Nadine Cross making a deal with the devil. Then imagine my surprise when Ezra Miller hoved into view playing a deviant intent on destroying everything around him.
No way!
The actors don't seem to be acting.
That's mental. Ezra Miller, of course, recently, well, he's been in the news a few times for violence against women, and then like he criticized the police for misgendering him.
Yeah,
he's a they them. He's not a he him.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. Do you know the Harry Potter films, right? So I find it really curious that in some way the actors have gone on to resemble their characters quite strongly. One of the actors for either Crabbe or Goyle got booted off the set for a drug-related offence later on, which is just quite funny, I thought.
Right.
And then, of course, Emma Watson has taken her sort of goody-two-shoes character all the way to the UN. So, you know, I find it really interesting how a lot of the time, like, actors really are cast in who they are.
Yeah.
Go to the next comment.
I don't have a problem if they want to try and sell virtual kids, because anyone who wants to be a parent isn't going to buy that anyway, and anyone who would buy that probably shouldn't be in charge of real children, because children are not pets to be cute for your amusement when you're bored. Children are developing people, and your job as a parent is to sacrifice and provide to shape them into good people. And your reward as a parent is the fulfillment of seeing them come to fruition.
Mm. Yeah, no, wise words. Let's go to the next comment.
Good evening and welcome back to my video comments. Now, the left wants to accuse me of being responsible for a mass shooting. Well, how do they do this? Well, they accuse me of spreading the Great Replacement conspiracy theory. So what do they mean by this? Well, they call me a bigot for repeating what they themselves say about immigration. They want to pretend they're not saying it because they want to gaslight you.
This is a great point. This is a great point. A lot of stuff that right-wing people get criticized for is basically just regurgitating or noticing the same things as a left-wing person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a right-wing person doing it. So, for example, when John Cleese, who technically, I mean, he's not right-wing, but he said, London's not recognizable as recognizably English as it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, left-wing people are always saying, oh, London's so multicultural and diverse because, you know, immigrants make such a contribution to it. John Cleese said the exact same thing and was criticized for being racist.
Yeah, because he said it in a right-wing way.
Yeah.
I know. It almost seems like if you want to inject any idea into public discourse, you have to frame it in a left-wing way.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, hope that people pick up on it as it filters through the...
Yeah, that's a great point. But yeah, I mean, that guy made a brilliant point. I mean, the replacement theory, I mean, I can't even believe it's a sort of controversial theory. Of course,
it's a fact of demographics.
Of course, left wing politicians want to get more votes, and they even say that you know, the right are stifling, trying to suppress immigrant voters or something, so that the right can get in. So the flip side of that is, you know, then those people are voting for the left, so there's an incentive there for the left to. So yeah, I mean, it's not. I can't believe it's even controversial.
I know, it's ridiculous. The things that they try to pretend are verboten.
Yeah,
you know. If we go to the next comment.
On Thursday the 2nd, I went to a Jubilee event with a friend where I saw houses and public areas with more bunting and flags than I could reasonably take photos of, had some good food and a festive ale called Jubilee Ale, petted a very good boy called Milo, spelled with a Y and not an I, like our ex-gay provocateur, and had the benefit of seeing a Lancaster bomber fly over 3 times. It was refreshing to see so much unapologetic patriotism, and I thought I'd share some proud Britishness with you guys.
Classic British cottage.
Yeah, that's really nice. The mini at the side, some nice big flags. Yeah. That's lovely. Low-key, understated. Good. Next comment.
So it turns out if you keep applying for enough jobs, eventually you do get enough people asking you for interviews. A lot of interviews. The other thing I'd like to bring up is Lodecetus, stop censoring my video comments. Or so help me, I will make them very cringe. And also, to people like that oil guy who's going to be at the barbecue we're all going to tomorrow, see you there. And if this isn't played on Friday, just delete the thing.
If we go to the next comment.
Here's a little view of Split Rock along the old Oregon Trail here in Wyoming.
Used to be a computer game, didn't it?
Beautiful country.
Oregon Trail.
There's a book as well.
And I can luckily say I didn't die of dysentery.
That looks amazing.
Well, that's the meme, isn't it? I played this game briefly. It's like a really old school game from like maybe even the 80s or something like that. And you always end up dying of dysentery or dying of... It's just like a really primitive survival adventure game.
Right.
So you're trying to cross the Oregon Trail. Well, do we have multiple videos? Okay, let's go.
During the Viking Age in the East, there was a slave trade, and the young blonde ones had the highest sales rate, while the brown-haired one wasn't worth as much. Thank you so much for joining me here at this special exhibition at Moesgaard, Vikings in the East. Please tell me if you would be interested in more of this kind of content, going to different museums and places in Denmark, telling about Viking history, and maybe I should invest in a selfie stick for higher quality videos. Tell me what you think, and see you next week.
I'm personally a big fan of the history, the Viking aesthetic and everything, so more of that I'd be very happy with. That's good
stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the history, also contemporary, what it's like to live in Denmark or wherever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to read a couple of comments,
because
we've had a lot of video comments, we don't have much time. Maureen says, "It is disconcerting that one cannot discuss multiple points of view without immediately getting accused of being pro-Russian or pro-Ukraine, so that no one is willing to listen. Some people are getting pretty good at censoring themselves and others. For instance, when I went to the theatre a few weeks ago, there was a minute of silence and the musicians played the anthem of Ukraine, after which they got a standing ovation. And when everyone just kept on clapping, I blurted out to the friend I went with that this must feel like how one must have felt attempting one of Stalin's speeches in the Soviet Union. Maybe it was a bit tasteless, but he got scared."
Yeah. Aww. But yeah, the first person who stopped clapping at Stalin's speeches
gets a
visit from the...
Keith Savage gets it. He says, "BBC journos are slippery, champagne-swilling weasels." By and large, a lot of them do fit that description. There are some good ones, though. You know, it's a big institution. Occasionally you find someone, it's like, oh my God, he has a brain. But usually that's not the case. And finally, I'm just going to throw in, Alex Ogle says, "Leo is right that the BBC isn't an uncritical mouthpiece of the government. But that may be the way they obfuscate their bias issue. They do seem to favour a powerful elite who will rule by expert advice in the manner of the rationalists in Michael Oakeshott's fantastic essay, and they uncritically attack any government that doesn't conform to that ideal, particularly the Conservatives." So certainly plenty of food for thought there. I'm sorry I didn't get more time to go through and really chew through your comments, because there's some good stuff in here. But we are going away for the weekend. We finally get a day off. We have weekend segments going up. You can check out our content on lotuseaters.com. And we shall be back Monday for the live podcast. So it's goodbye from Leah.
Bye. Follow my YouTube.
All right.
Just do it. Bye.